There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
ass. And your testicles was in my face, and I'm
I really wish y'all wouldn't keep playing that cut. As we get started with Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday, glad to have you along, Live Local Talk, this hour. And this would be the last of the camel news. I don't know, because it's, you know, it's time for 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig. I don't know. We'll...
His what? We're in her face.
Well, let's go back to the okay, in the control room. Let's go back to cut number two there.
And his testicles was in my
face. Okay, listen, we can't keep playing that.
It's a medical term.
That's right, it is, but we're just not going to play it for purient interest. So set up the hour once again. It's time for 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig. All right, these are all these stories that I have just flat missed this week, but Dalton's got hold of them and rounded them up, and he's driving them right into your ears.
Yeah, that's right. Very painfully driving them into your ears. And, so what 6.5 Stories is, every week, we don't get to all the stories, some by choice, some because we just don't have enough time to get to them.
Some by municipal code we can't get to.
Right, so each week I go through and find some of the wacky stories that are out there on the internet that I thought would be of interest to this Friday afternoon crowd here on Midday Mobile. And we start in a place that, Sean, you and I both know very well, Pennsylvania, where we have a brazen theft that occurred. Actually, in this case, a brazen theft.
A what?
A brazen. I've always said that word incorrectly, and this time I would actually be correct in using those words, because police right now looking for a group of people that they stole a variety of items from the Capital City Mall in Lower Allen Township, Pennsylvania. And what they stole included more than $1,600 worth of bras from Victoria's Secret.
Well, how many is that?
I think three or four.
Right, that's like three or four bras. Right.
That's your entire Christmas shopping budget right there. Police said they were called around 5:30 last Saturday after this theft from Victoria's Secret had occurred. And who would steal from Victoria? Just a fine woman there. And most of the malls.
All of them.
Police said around 5:10 p.m., a woman carrying a large purse began, quote, organizing several bras inside the store, which probably not uncommon with some of the women that go into Victoria's Secret. I imagine a lot of organizers, you know, walk in there and start moving things around.
Right.
But this woman had an ulterior motive. A man came in shortly afterwards carrying two plastic bags that are associated with other stores, so they probably thought he had just been shopping and walking in to buy the wife something. Then they filled the bags with 30 bras, each valued around $54.50. I guess that's what they worked the average out to. The total amount of the theft, $1,635. They had left the store 3 minutes later, so it only took 3 minutes to get those 30 bras in those bags. And then they left the mall in a silver Chrysler Town & Country minivan. Police said
Of course they did. They were in the minivan.
They have not been. I would imagine there was probably a car seat in there, too. The pair has not been caught yet, and they say they may have been working with another woman. So police now looking for a threesome out there in the Lower Allen Township. They also stole from American Eagle, so probably two pair of jeans, another $2,000 worth of goods.
Right.
Anyone who recognizes the people shown in the photos, police say should ask what they're wearing. No, don't do that. Just call the police, I guess.
Okay, so a couple questions come to mind. What size?
It does not say. Do you think they went with a variety of sizes?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because if they were getting it to sell secondhand, or if they were getting it for one of the ladies or two of the ladies, then part of the investigation could be we're looking for...
that might be a clue.
Somebody who's a C cup or and accomplished a D cup. I've lost institutional control of this show today.
they could be saying that. And I really think it would help.
Bolo for a D cup.
If they really want to catch these people, you're right. That would be a very important clue. What size cup did they steal?
I mean, give myself in so much trouble.
So that's the first story right there. Looking for women.
Way to set the bar.
Women wearing Victoria's Secret around Pennsylvania. And they better catch them fast because it's about to get cold. In Pennsylvania, it'll be a lot harder to see what they might be wearing.
I'm not. Story okay. two.
All right, story number two here. This comes from Chattanooga, Tennessee, another state that I know pretty well. WTVD TV in Chattanooga. And a woman tried to rescue a cat. You know, we hear stories about that all the time.
Kitty rescue, right?
Crazy cat lady rescues cat. She thought she rescued a cute, cuddly kitten.
Oh, here we go.
After, you know, her neighbors came over, she talked to a few people. Turned out to be a bobcat that was crossing the street that she picked up and tried to save. They said the animal climbed all over Jill Hicks, that's her name, climbed all over her after it got in the car with her. She said, I pulled over on the side of the road, got out, got the cat. It did run a little bit, but not fast and not far. Anyway, she picked it up, put it in the car with her, and then after talking with neighbors, she realized she had actually rescued a bobcat, and that changed her plan for what to do with the little guy.
you don't say.
She gave the bobcat over to the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency, where the bobcat was named Arwen, so they went ahead and gave it a name.
Right.
And then the Wildlife Resources Agency, they said they wanted you to know that bobcats can be found all around the state. So thanks. Yeah, thank you for that. Now we know.
Beware, whether it's a kitten or a bobcat.
Okay. Yeah, they're everywhere in Tennessee. Story number three here. Let's stick on the animal theme here for a second, and I guess maybe the crazy lady theme.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me after the story whether you believe.
Okay.
Whether this was true or not.
All right.
Okay. Okay, so Pulaski, Virginia is where this went down.
Okay.
And we found out about this story on my birthday, September the 20th. That's when Pulaski PD posted to their Facebook page, something happened in town today that you would have had to see to believe. Tia Powell contacted the police department in reference to a squirrel following her on the trail near Kiwanis Park. The squirrel stood in her way on the trail. They said the story got stranger when Powell explained that she became convinced the squirrel was trying to communicate with her, so it was following her around the park. They said the squirrel led her down the trail to a baby squirrel with an injured leg. At one point, Powell wasn't sure she could help. She began walking, and the squirrel followed her again and actually tugged her pant leg. That's when she called the cops, as you do when you're witnessing, you know, an injured squirrel in the park. What Powell told them was not released or what the dispatcher said. However, the officers did show up to the Kiwanis Park to investigate. When officers arrived, both squirrels were patiently sitting with Powell on the ground. Powell got both squirrels to safety and back in their tree. Had Tia not been willing to trust her instincts that something was wrong, this might have had a very different ending. Then the department posted a video of the squirrels, which has been viewed 101,000 times since they added it. And they updated it later, apparently in response to concerns for the baby. So a squirrel follows her around to warn her that there is a baby squirrel with a broken leg. Kind of a Lassie situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story.
Okay. So did the police department say that when they showed up that the two squirrels were with her waiting for...
That's right. They were sitting on the ground.
Is that her account or is that PD's account?
That's the PD's account.
Because I was... Well, maybe the PD's on drugs, too.
Oh,
maybe.
And by the way, there was a mean cat that was about to pounce on broken-legged squirrel. That was part of the urgency.
The cat's
that
not mean. The cat's being a cat.
Yeah, well, they...
It's not... I mean, people are like, oh, that mean alligator attacks. It's what they do. Mm-hmm. It's what cats are supposed to... God made them... The cats are supposed to get stuff. It's what they do.
Yeah. No, okay. Mean cat in this situation.
Yeah, see, I love the way human beings like to put these... Because we anthropomorphize everything, and so now they got to act like... No, the cat's not mean. The cat is a cat.
Mm-hmm. Mean. Very, very mean cat. They said officers made several attempts to have a wildlife group respond, and then they throw that wildlife group under the bus so they were unable to get anyone. So
the squirrel thing is part of it, but she's communicating with the squirrel. It tugged on her pant leg to let her.
And who knows if it did a little squirrel point, like
right,
tugged
yes,
on her leg.
Come on, here
pointed,
we go.
Come,
yes.
Follow me.
What, in the well? Timmy's in the well? I believe that the police department showed up and saw. There's details there that I think are possibly driven by.
Are squirrels able to do that? And well, you know,
well, sure, if you can train something to have a response that, you know, if it, you could train a squirrel that if it goes and pulls on a pant leg, then it gets a peanut or something like that.
Right.
You know, I mean, you could do that.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, but it was trained.
But
in
a
that
wild
manner.
Squirrel that's out there that's going to run up to, if any critter, we've talked about this before, like with the rabid foxes or the raccoons, stuff that normally runs away from you,
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't, you go the other way.
And
if it, there's something wrong,
and
if a squirrel or something, or a fox or a raccoon, if it's out in the daylight and doesn't run away from you, just get out.
Yeah, and don't take this story, you know, for face value. These squirrels could be, it could have been a setup. It could have pulled her around, got her to follow it down to this, you know, dark
That's
trail.
That's where they get your wallet.
She thinks she's about to help this broken-legged squirrel, mm-hmm. and then they rob her. That could have easily happened.
Be happy to be... Be something to be robbed by a squirrel piece of. Okay, that's story number
three there.
All right, you want to save three for... We would do one more here before
okay,
we go to the
we'll,
break.
Yeah, we'll knock out one more story here. Okay. This story comes from San Lorenzo, California, and a woman actually passed away here recently, and not just any woman. She was one of the oldest people in America. She lived through two world wars, 18 presidents, and six moon landings. They said here she was born before television came into being. Her name is Isabel Albright from right there in San Lorenzo, California, and she passed away 102 years old. Her family came to her house, you know, to clean up, maybe mm-hmm. get it ready for sale or whoever
right.
was going to take over in that house, and then do all the other things you have to do, unfortunately, when someone passes away, like end her satellite contract. And that's where things started to go wrong.
Oh,
so
no.
Her son-in-law, John Manrique, was there with the family cleaning up at the house, and they called DirecTV to cancel. DirecTV slammed this person with an early termination fee. 102 years old. She passes away.
And they're going to...
And DirecTV has the gall to hit him with an early termination fee.
I'd say she had a late termination.
I would say so, too.
102 years old. God bless her.
The son-in-law said, they told us, they being DirecTV, we're going to charge you $160 for an early termination fee. He said, she's gone. Nobody's living here. We're selling the house. Are you going to tell us we have to keep the service at a house that's not ours? And turns out a caregiver moved in towards the end of her house. Her daughter stayed often, so they added a DirecTV there. That's why they had it in the first place. And, yeah, DirecTV hit her with the early termination fee because she did not, at the age of 102, get to live out the end of her two-year agreement.
I'd say sue me. Come after me.
And they went through the, you know, stages, called DirecTV asking for proof that they'd signed a two-year agreement, and they said DirecTV had no proof. They then contacted Seven on Your Side there with KGO-TV in San Lorenzo, and they're trying to make things right now.
So you're telling me that even dying doesn't get you out of your contract?
That's correct. But then it's, you know, it's not your problem anymore.
No, it's other people's problem, that's for sure. All right, coming right back, more of 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig. The squirrel tugged on her pant leg.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And drugs were not... All right. Be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, and we are slap dab in the middle of 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig. Y'all listening back there, we're slap dab in the middle of 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig. One more time. Must be a Friday around here. All right, making our way through all these stories about squirrels that tug on people's pant legs.
Yep.
Bra theft going on, bra raid.
Early termination fees.
Yeah, there's those kind of things. And yet to have anybody out of Florida.
Yeah, not yet. And don't wait too long because no Florida man or woman stories in this. I mean, that's a huge upset. That'd be like Florida State winning a game.
I was thinking maybe if they're looking for an extra mascot at Florida other than Gator, they could go with Florida man.
Yeah.
Somebody and dresses up as Florida man.
And it'd be easy to just grab somebody out of the stands.
Right, exactly.
You know, most of the time.
They're chock full of Florida man. All right, where are we on our list?
We are at story number five here, and we've had some crazy animal stories. Now it's time to get to some football talk. And
okay, good. I'm in.
We all know some of the colleges and pro teams around that when they score or do something cool on the field, they have a cannon, you know, usually Buccaneers
sure.
or Pirates or,
right.
you know, service academies. Well, we had a football game last Saturday up in Maine, and it was between the Maine Maritime Academy and Massachusetts Maritime Academy. Big, big rivalry.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have there. And one of the traditions there at Maine Maritime is to shoot the cannon off anytime they score a touchdown.
That makes actually a lot of sense. I think that would be your Maritime Academy.
Yeah, and of course, like all the other football teams that do that, they don't actually load a cannonball in the cannon.
It'd be bad for the crowd to fire.
But authorities, and you know the story's going to get good when it starts with authorities.
I love it.
They said that an alumnus of the Maine Maritime Academy brought his own cannon to the homecoming game.
Mm-hmm.
It's already something they did was shoot from the cannon. This guy brought his own cannon. He loaded it with black powder and, quote, a substance that he had made into a wad. Well, after the touchdown, he must have been there in the end zone. He shoots off this cannon, and a referee happened to be walking in front of the cannon, was struck by the wad in the head and taken to a hospital with injuries that weren't considered life-threatening. They said they took the incident. It was captured on video, posted it online, and the referee was shown walking near the edge of the field near the second half. That's when they shot the cannon. He immediately grabbed his head and collapsed to the ground. In a statement, the school said that the cannon, once again owned and operated by an alumnus, was, quote, fired from outside the fence behind the end zone. One of the game officials was proceeding along the end line when the cannon was fired and was struck by packing material from the cannon. The academy's president has directed that these devices will no longer be permitted on campus for future events, and an investigation will be referred to the district's attorney's office pending potential criminal charges. And Maine ended up losing that game 42-21 to the Massachusetts Maritime Academy. But a referee who have been at the wrong end of a lot of threats in plenty of games around America ends up getting shot by the cannon that's fired off whenever the team scores.
I got so many questions.
Okay.
So many. First of all, I like the fact that now, if you read back, now you can't have cannons there. Because I was wondering at first, at least he's in the parking lot, because at first I'm hearing the story, I'm like, how did dude get a cannon inside the
lead? Yeah.
I can't even get a fifth of Jim Beam into Brian Denny, and this guy's got a cannon. And then, so he's out in the parking lot, right? So it must be a thing there. It's a tailgating.
That's what you would think.
This is my tailgate cannon. And listen, I know an individual, actually, I know two individuals have cannons, plus the JCs with the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, they got their own cannon.
You know, three people more than cannons. I do that they personally own cannons.
That's cool. Well, it's one group with the Mobile JCs and then two individuals. But, okay, so you loaded, you put the gunpowder in, right? So that's the first thing that goes in. Then the wadding is what goes usually between the gunpowder and whatever, whether you're using a cannonball or grape shot or all this.
A pumpkin.
Whichever goes in there. But the wadding still comes out with the force of being, now it doesn't have the kinetic energy of lead shot.
Right. Still hurt. Still,
it could really mess you up.
Probably kill you if you're
doofus.
Close enough.
So, but now it's not okay to have cannons.
Yeah,
they changed the rules.
They've added the magnetometers and can no longer bring a cannon.
You know, here's the problem. There could be like a fun thing at a tailgate somewhere where they would fire cannons, do it safely. But it's like every law, every rule in the world is because there's one person that doesn't know how. The rest of us can do it right.
Yeah.
The rest of us can carry a cannon into a football game.
And apparently,
but there's just that one dude.
It's for as long as they've been shooting the cannon here at Maine Maritime Academy. That has never happened until this last Saturday. Now they're banned. And you know, at this football game in particular, if you say that guy has a cannon, a little bit of a different meaning.
Yes, means something different now.
Than other football games. That brings us to story number six here. And you might have seen this. This went viral this week. It happened in China on an airplane, Xiamen Airlines in China. And recently, they had a flight delayed, like so many of us had before.
Mm-hmm.
But this reason, different than many of the other reasons, a woman delayed her flight's departure by 1 hour because she opened the emergency exit door of the aircraft. She felt the cabin was, quote, too stuffy and wanted a, quote, breath of fresh air. Now, she got hot, apparently, towards the end of boarding for whatever this flight was. She was traveling from one airport there in China to another, and she had actually been warned by the flight attendants not to touch the lever on the emergency exit.
Oh, she's obviously been messing with it beforehand.
Yeah, they knew she was eyeing it pretty hard before, or even touching it. They said, don't do that. She didn't listen, popped the door open, and she was pretty much immediately arrested. They had to delay the takeoff by 1 hour. go through safety inspections all over again to make sure it wouldn't, you know, open during the flight. They said she'll probably get hit with a fine. But this went viral in China before it went viral here. Said it had over 18 million views in China to date.
I don't got much going on there. But, okay, a couple things. I just say the main thing here. Number one, she wanted to open up. Open up a window, get a little air in here. Number
hot.
Two, you, no, one of you can't tell me you've not thought about that before.
I have, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you sit in an exit row, right? And I'm not going to tell you all the responsibilities of sitting in an exit row. You've heard it from the flight attendant. But you're sitting in an exit row. Not that because you're normal people, you wouldn't do that. But you think about the fact that there's that.
Well, that's one of the tenets of being selected to sit in the exit row. You're
right.
Responsible.
I mean, you're
person.
Now you're going to be the first one that's sucked out of the airplane. but you at least go, wow, that little that could all go down.
Yeah.
That okay.
I'm usually enjoying the extra foot space a little too much
right.
to worry about opening the door. But that does remind me. You know, I was China. It's a country we've heard a lot about lately. Reminds me one of my favorite hits, and this too deserves to go viral online. But in honor of this story about China, I thought I would play one of the greatest remixes I've ever heard. And play. And we'll see if it'll play now.
Let's say
there we
China.
Go.
China. 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 I have to have my China. 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 China.
Somebody's taking all the presidents saying China.
That's right.
China. 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 I know China very well. China. 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 China.
This is the remix.
China, China, China. Buy from China, 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 China. China. I have people.
Do people? I'm impressed with the creativity, but do people have jobs? I mean, because we're in an economy where everybody's employed.
Yeah, they either don't have jobs, which I think is probably half of the people that do these, and then the other half just really don't like their job or don't have anything to do in that job.
The President Trump China. remix here on 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig.
Yeah, so there you go. One of my favorite remixes ever.
That's available on YouTube now, right?
Yeah, right now. You can find it on YouTube. Just search Trump China remix like I did.
All right, very good.
And that brings us to Story 6.5. It's where we all play a game. I give you half the story, or it might be kind of like fill in the blank, and then you give me your answer.
All right,
on
I'm
the text
ready.
Line.
I'm feeling lucky.
And we'll stick with the theme of airlines, specifically airlines in Japan. In this Asian airline.
Okay.
So that was a Chinese airline.
All right.
We'll go to Japan for
okay.
this one. And pretty cool thing they're doing here in Japan. When you get your ticket online, they will warn you if blank. When you get your ticket, Japan Airlines will warn you beforehand that blank may occur.
Blank may occur.
That blank could occur because...
Well, it would be so pedestrian for it to be a delay, a flight delay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty common.
It would be no alcohol service. It's probably not that. Probably not that. That there will be somebody so big, although it's Japan, but I would guess somebody so big that they spill over into your seat.
That's good. They need to add that.
You know what I'm talking about? Where like they're like you like I've like your shoulders can't
yeah.
not touch.
Like you're sitting next to a cow here.
Yes. Yes. Or just somebody with huge shoulders. Yes. Okay. So what is it?
Well, very close to that. That might be the next feature. Japan Airlines, now in a booking process, you know, you go online and get your tickets, and you can actually pick the seat where you will sit in. Now they'll let you know on that map of the seats in the airplane where babies will be seated during the flight. When passengers are traveling with a child less than 2 years old, they have a child icon that pops up there on the seat when others go to select their seats. And not sure when exactly they rolled out this feature, but it was first noticed here this last week when a venture capitalist tweeted about it. Japan Airlines did not immediately return a request for comment yet, but they do say there are some caveats to the child icon feature. Child icons won't appear if the person traveling with children selected their seats from tour booking or from another website rather than directly through Japan Airlines. So there you go, though. Maybe they should institute that in some of the American airline booking processes, Delta, Southwest.
I think they should just clump all, and I've been that person that's traveling with children, and they probably should put us all together in one area. All right. 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig, and it's the China remix.
The China remix.
All right. You want to get that? Can you fire it back up? Take it. There we go. We'll take it. Take us out. All right.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you along on this edition of Midday Mobile. Reminder, too, this show and the 45 hours a week of live local programming we do available in podcast form. You can go straight to our website, fmtalk1065.com. Click the link for podcasts. Get them a la carte there. You can even get them at iTunes, Stitcher. Subscribe there. Also, TuneIn Radio, and you can get them on Spotify. All right, and I mentioned this earlier, and this is very interesting, and I think it's going to be interesting to a lot of y'all out there, and maybe some parents out there, because Stacey Constantine in from the FBI to talk about recruiting. That's what you do. You're a recruiter with the FBI.
Right, I'm the recruiter. Correct.
So okay, we talk about recruiting. Usually we're talking about football recruiting in here, but talking about recruiting for the bureau. That's an interesting job. You're recruiting the top law enforcement agents in the country.
Right. Trying to, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a process. I guess we don't think about it. When we think about the FBI and we think about agents, I don't really stop to think how they got there.
Right. So typically, being an agent is someone's second or third career in their life. So we're really trying to find those people that hit the right ages. You know, you have to be between 23 and 36, but you also have to have some life experience. You have to have a degree. So trying to find people that have already had a career, had some experience in life, and just looking to make the next step or change. A lot of times people are coming out of the military or wanting to move from local law enforcement to federal. Or some people who've just been in their career for several years and just want to make a change. Agents come from all different walks of life and backgrounds. So really, my job is just to get out and make sure that people know that they can come from anywhere and become a special agent.
Is it that I've watched too many of the shows about the FBI that seems to reinforce that there are people with different specialties that
right.
come to the FBI? And it, like you just said, not always law enforcement.
Not always law enforcement. No, just in our office in Mobile, we have special agents that were prior teachers, nurses, construction managers, biologists. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they really can come from anywhere, and I think that's just a part of it that is not promoted as well in the media and the television shows. You think you have to have a criminal justice degree,
right.
psychology degree, and
yep.
you know, be in local law enforcement or the military, and then go into the FBI. But really, it's not the case.
Hey, you're talking about that life experience, and that's got to be important as well, as you have agents in there that may know. You just named a bunch of different trades and life things that give you a certain range of knowledge on top of what will be, you know, a job as an agent.
Right. So we teach people how to be agents. That's why we have Quantico in our basic field training course. We send those people there for 21 weeks to teach them the basic skills of how to be an agent. Most of their training is going to come once they get to their first field office and they're assigned to a training agent, and they're going to focus on which violation they'll be working, which could be anything from violent crime, white collar, terrorism, cyber crime. So they're really going to learn their focus once they get to their field office. But while they're spending 21 weeks in Quantico, they're learning the basic knowledge. So where you come from is not as important. Just your ability to learn,
mm-hmm.
willingness to learn, curiosity, people who are intelligent. So that's really what we look for.
It sounds like the FBI is a lot like other businesses. You know, I could
Correct.
Teach you. I could teach you to do this thing. I just need somebody who can learn
yes.
things and retain
yes.
them. Let's talk about this process as a recruiter. Here, how do people who are listening to us right now, if they're interested in getting on board, going through the process, what's the first step, Stacey? What
website.
Do they do? Okay.
So, that's another big push as a recruiter, is just to let everyone know that you just go online. It's like most businesses. We have our own website. It's www.fbijobs.gov.
Okay.
You can go there, search any job that's open right now nationwide. Some jobs are going to be office specific, and some will be nationwide postings where you put in and then you find out later which office you're going to. Some of them you can put your preference of office, but the special agent and the intelligence analyst, they have to be open to go in anywhere in the needs of the bureau, wherever we
right.
assign them to. But they start on the website.
All right, so you go to the website, you sign up, and then through this process, you're going to get are you going to get an email back, or how does that work? How do you know, and what do you do next?
Right, so let's talk specifically about the special agent position and how that one works. It's different than some of the other positions. But so they'll fill out their profile
okay.
online. and they'll apply to the job posting. The special agent posting's been up for several years now. It will continue to stay up for a while since we're trying to increase our numbers. So they apply to the posting. There's certain documents that they have to have uploaded, like their transcript, their resume. Really try to push people to use the federal resume format. There's a
That's something we can Google and find?
Yeah, well, okay, it's on the website.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, there's
good.
A link to it on the website. So we encourage people to use that resume format. So then they go through the initial screening process. That's where their application is going to be screened and make sure that they meet the minimum qualifications, which are, you know, 4-year degree, at least 2 years of work experience, and that they're in the right age range, and that they have all of their documentation uploaded. So initial screening, you pass through that, you get an invitation to phase one, okay. Which is a computer-based test done at a local testing facility. You schedule it yourself. You go to the testing facility, take the test. You find out immediately if you passed or failed.
Okay.
So that's phase one. You pass phase one, then there's going to be some additional information you'll have to fill out. You'll have to give yourself our fitness test.
Okay.
Self-administer the fit test. We have an app to guide you along. You can download it in your app store, Android, Apple devices. Get your score, and then you'll submit that, and then you come in for what we call the meet and greet session. So that's done at a local office. So we do them in the Mobile office for Mobile applicants. You come in, you sit down, you meet me. I'm your applicant coordinator. You also meet with an agent. We discuss the entire process at length. We go through their application. We try to prepare them for their interview. We talk about the fit test. Takes us a couple of hours. We really try to get to know the applicant, give them any advice that we can give them, answer all their questions. They typically have a lot of questions about the process. And then from there, you move into the interview and the written test. So we call it phase two. It's broken into two parts, written and interview.
Okay.
The written, there's not a whole lot you can do to prepare. It's just to see how well you can analyze information, collect your thoughts, you know, write how you can write documents. And then we fly them to a regional site to do their interview.
Okay.
And their interview is done in a panel. It would be three senior agents on their panel. It's about an hour-long interview, and that's really when you get to see if someone has that life experience or that work experience that we're looking for to become an agent. So the phase two interview is kind of the biggest stepping point in the process. It's kind of a make it or break it. You do get two shots at it. So if someone fails, they can wait a year, come back and try it again. A lot of times it's just because they don't have that life experience that we're looking for. So if they pass the interview and the written, then they move on to doing the fit test. Like I said, we have an app that they can download.
I want to go download that app and see how.
Yeah, it's actually really helpful. It has lots of videos, tutorials. You can put your times in as you're taking the test, and it will give you your overall score. So there's four different events, as many sit-ups as you can do in a minute, a 300-meter sprint, as many push-ups as you can do untimed, and then a mile-and-a-half run. So we score those. You have to have at least 1 point in each event and a total of 12 to pass.
Okay.
Once you pass that, then you go into the background investigation.
Okay.
So many steps here. So once you get into the background investigation, that's where the polygraph comes in, security interview. It's where we really start to get into your personal life, you know, what kind of person you are.
Right.
And so then if you can pass the background investigation, then you can go into Quantico, and that's when they go for the 21 weeks to learn how to become an agent.
I guess as sitting back with you know, maybe looking in the rearview mirror, that's a pretty exciting process. I mean, that's pretty
it's
neat.
It's lengthy, yeah.
But it's exciting.
It
the
is
stuff
exciting.
You're talking. Okay, so, and also, you and I were talking about before we went on here, a special push here to get more women involved.
Right. Yeah, our agent population right now, we have about 13,000 agents, and only about 20% of those are female. So that's not a very good reflection on the population.
Right.
So we're really trying to increase those numbers. This year, today we're over at the Focus Women's event recruiting. We've got a women's event coming up on the Mississippi Gulf Coast that's women focused. So we're really trying to get out this year and really make a hard push for female agents.
You talk about some great life experience. There's a lot of women could bring some serious life experience to the Bureau. All right, so once again, somebody's listening to us, ladies and men, but somebody who's interested in this process, the first step you told me is go to the website.
Go to the website, absolutely.
And that is FBI?
FBIjobs.gov.
All right, that starts that process, and then from there on, all that exciting stuff you just rolled out happened. I never knew actually what the process was, so I mean, I think there's a lot of us that may not even be signing up, but we're pretty interested in what that
right.
process is like.
Yeah, it is, and it's lengthy for a reason. You know, we're trying to find the best, most qualified applicants.
13,000, y'all. You know, yeah. For the nation. I mean,
right, that's, yeah. Only 13,000. That's not a lot.
It's pretty high grade, yes.
Yeah, and it takes us about 13,000 applicants to get 1,000 good qualified people to put to the academy in a year. Yeah.
Wow.
So we need a lot of people that are applying.
Okay, and once again, the age range you said was
23 to 36. Okay. So you have to, you can turn 37 in the academy, but our retirement is 57. So you have to have 20 years and retire by the age of 57. So that's why that age cutoff is on the agent. But that's the only position that has an age requirement. And so I think that's a misconception in the public that, you know, that age requirement is on all positions. And that's not the case. It's only for the agent.
Okay, only for agents. So, and there are other jobs, I mean, with FBI.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the FBI is just like a business. I mean, we're self-sustaining. So we have everything from our own mechanics, our own finance people, our own recruiters, our own community outreach. So we do everything. So we have to have people from all different walks of life to represent all of these different positions.
All right. This is really cool stuff. If y'all listen, we'll put the links up for the website so you can go there. Stacy, thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Stacy Constantine from the FBI, FBI recruiter, FBI. You go to the FBIjobs.gov, and hopefully you might be a special agent one day. All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
My buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino back in studio and talking about a subject that was big when we first started talking about it. But man, it is everywhere now, the discussion of these faulty 3M earplugs. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me here.
This is a story that affects so many people in our area. The number of veterans in our area of the Gulf Coast, between Northwest Florida, Alabama, and Southeast Mississippi, is of big volume.
That's one of the beauties of this case, is that I really don't have to go further than, you know, 100-mile radius or even my back door, basically, to represent clients in this litigation, because there are so many people that love our country and have served our country that are right here in our backyard. And I think it's so important to be able to meet with your lawyer, see your lawyer face-to-face. I mean, you can do things over the phone, by email, but there's things that aren't communicated like that. And so that's the beauty of having us, you know, handle these cases. And we're actually on the leadership team now in the litigation that's centered in Pensacola. So we're thick in this case, and we're able to know the things that we need to know to represent these guys and ladies. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity, really.
Yeah, it's something as a Marine that you get to help out other members of the armed forces. But also, you mentioned the Pensacola part, so people don't get confused. You explained this to us last time. National case, but they've picked to hold this trial. This is happening right here in our backyard.
So this is what's called a multi-district litigation. It's just a fancy word for when there are lawsuits, individual suits that are filed all over the country. There's a federal procedural tool that says, hey, I don't want 30 or 50 different federal judges ruling on the same case and having inconsistent rulings. So we're going to send all the individual cases to one location under one judge. Same thing happened with BP, and it got sent to New Orleans. Judge Barbier there, Chinese drywall, got sent to New Orleans. Judge Fallon there. This one got sent to, or has been sent to Pensacola, and Judge Casey Rogers is the judge there, and she's sharp as a tack, and she's going to be a great judge, we believe.
So you are on the leadership board in this?
Yes, I got appointed by Judge Rogers to the leadership team. I'm on, it sounds real fancy, it sounds like Joint Chiefs of Staff or something, and I was just a lowly enlisted Marine, but it's the Joint Armed Services Committee. So what we do is we handle any type of communications or document production between the head of the litigation, the plaintiff's side, and the government and the military. So that's sort of our role in it, is to be a liaison. And you know, and I like being a enlisted Marine, dealing with all these officers and big wigs, and I say, how do you like dealing with a lowly enlisted guy?
You know, it's you mentioned the national scope of this, but what's important for people to understand, because I hear there, all this noise coming out of them, information coming out of them about this. The point is, you're taking cases, Ed. You're taking individual cases. This is not, like you mentioned, it's like BP. It's a big, big story, a lot of damages, a lot of people, but individuals are coming to you. It's not as a group. Like, that person comes to you, and you're their attorney.
Yeah, I want to get that word out, because I'm hearing this on a consistent basis. Almost everyone I meet with says that, yeah, I've seen those ads or heard some radio spots, and it sounds like one of those many class actions where the person at the end of the day, 5 years down the road, gets like $50, and it's really not even worth their while to even get involved in it. And so this is not a class action. I explained that to them. I explained what it is. It's a multi-district litigation. Everybody has their own individual case, and it's going to be much more substantial than what you would see from a class action, where, like, let's say a cellular phone company charges $2 a month on somebody's bill, on everybody's bill in the nation, make a bunch of money on it, and you have damages of $30 or something like that. It's not going to be worth most people's time to even really bother with that. And I throw those things away and ignore those ads on TV as well. But this is much different. And plus, it's got a moral and ethical side about making sure that a company that wants to profit by selling the military certain goods, a safety product, and making sure that company knows that if they're going to manufacture a safety product, it's got to work, and it cannot put our troops in harm's way. And these earplugs, we have the documentation. It's out there. You can find it online right now. 3M knew that the earplugs didn't work. They were essentially worthless, and they sold these things to the government, didn't tell the government about this to such an extent that it was deceitful that the government had a criminal investigation against 3M and also sued 3M for fraud. That's how all this came out, is when the government sued 3M for fraud, and 3M agreed to pay $9.1 million for defrauding the government. That's when this all came out. But folks like us, like myself, said, hey, well, what about the boots on the ground? What about the Marines and the guys in the Army, all the branches that wore these, the individual soldiers and troops that were handed these earplugs?
Issued them. What they had to wear.
Yes, they were issued them by the government. So it's almost as if 3M, put them in their hand and said, wear these earplugs, and then, looked away and winked and said, guess what? The earplugs don't work, and we don't care. And there were plenty of other earplugs out there that worked. I mean, just the plain old no-frills earplug that you squish up and stick in your ear, well, that sucker provides over 30 decibels of noise reduction. These 3M earplugs, the yellow side, their own tests show they provided zero noise reduction. The green side, which was the better side, only provided 10.9 decibels of noise reduction versus the old school plain Jane, once you stick in your ear and you get 30, 35 decibels of noise reduction. So the troops that I talk to and I tell them these things, they are shaking their head in disgust because they know the conditions that they have, that they can't hear. They have constant ringing in their ear. It drives them crazy. And this company knowingly sold bad earplugs that caused that. Now, how do we know that? Okay, so I'm a lawyer. You got to prove certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've heard other lawyers handling these cases that say, hey, we only want vets that joined after the earplugs were first issued, because no telling what they went through noise-wise before the earplugs were issued. So I've got a much different opinion about that. And what I'm seeing is the guys and the ladies that were in for 10, 15 years before these earplugs were issued, you know, they're doing rifle range yearly qualification. I even have, you know, one Marine that was in 6 combat missions before these earplugs were issued. And his hearing after 6 combat missions wearing plain old Jane earplugs was fine. I've got the audiograms to show that. But then for some strange reason, and I'm being facetious here, when the earplugs were issued back in 2002 and 3, his hearing per the audiogram test just went to junk, basically, you know. And there's no coincidence there. And that's not just one person I'm seeing this with. You know, if I have a client that has been in the military for 10, 15, whatever years before the earplugs were issued, I'm taking a strong note of that, and I'm eagerly looking and analyzing their audiograms, and I'm finding a definite huge trend that their hearing was fine when they were wearing their old school earplugs, but when these fancy earplugs by 3M got put in their hands and that's what they had to wear, well, their hearing was destroyed or damaged.
Yeah, I can hear it. Everybody can hear it in your voice. I've known you a long time. You're a passionate advocate for all your clients, but when it comes to members of the military, there's an extra part of this to it.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 21 years, practicing law, and it can be a stressful practice. And you know, my wife asked me every day, just like a lot of wives ask, and I ask her as well, how was your day? And you know, since I've been doing this, I get to meet with several vets every day and offer my services, offer my help to them. And I look at their records, and not a single one of them brag about any of their records of what they did. I mean, I'm talking about Purple Hearts, and Silver Stars and all sorts of things for acts of bravery that they've done. And I get to go home knowing that I'm representing people that literally put their blood on the battlefield, put their lives on the line, saved the lives of other people. And yeah, I get fired up about that.
And that's why you've got to have somebody who takes your individual case, your individual situation, and understands it. So somebody listening to us right now that fits the parameters of this time frame, that has been serving our military, had those earplugs, or even somebody who knows somebody, a loved one, how they get in touch, how do they get you to meet with that member of the military and find out more about their situation?
You know, to get in touch with me at my law firm here in Mobile, all you do is Google Taylor Martino Law Firm, Mobile, Alabama, and you'll find our information.
All right, Ed, thank you.
Thank you.
Ed Round with Taylor Martino, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.